Welcome to the Practice Made Perfect podcast. The episode you're listening to today was recorded before the COVID pandemic, but contains valuable information relating to those important non-clinical competencies we discuss daily in cardiology. We realize that the world we know today is very different than our world just a few months ago, but feel these topics will be even more valuable as we begin to negotiate the post-COVID practice of medicine.
Welcome. My name is Dr. Julie Clary, and I'm a general cardiologist with a focus on prevention and lipidology at Indiana University. I'll be your host today on the podcast as we discuss the art of persuasion, finding effective solutions for systems. I'm very excited to welcome Dr. Charlie Brown, Dr. Anthony Hilliard, and Joel Sauer to the show today. As all of us in healthcare know, things are changing. No longer are physicians and other members of the care team separated from hospitals. We are increasingly looking at the quality and cost effectiveness of the care we deliver, and this requires an entirely different set of skills than most of us learned in medical school. Our guests today are all involved in leading healthcare teams to partner with hospitals and other organizations to enhance the quality of care. Dr. Charles L. Brown III is an interventional cardiologist and currently serves as CEO of the Physician Enterprise for Piedmont Healthcare. Prior to that, he served as Chief of Cardiovascular Services for Piedmont Heart Institute. Piedmont Heart is now recognized as one of the most prominent heart institutes in the country and is a national model for physician-hospital integration. I'd like to welcome Dr. Charlie Brown to the podcast.
Thank you, Julie. Look forward to being here and having this discussion.
Next up, we have Dr. Anthony Hilliard. He is an interventional cardiologist and the chief of cardiology at Loma Linda and also serves as the COO of the LLU Faculty Medical Group and senior vice president of LLU Healthcare. He is governor-elect for the California chapter of the ACC and sits on the executive board of both national and state political action committees focused on patient advocacy. Welcome, Dr. Hilliard.
Hi, Julie. It's good to be here.
And finally, Mr. Joel Sauer currently serves as the Executive Vice President for Consulting at MedAxiom. He has been providing consultative services around the country to accelerate the value transition in healthcare, particularly within the cardiovascular realm, and has significant experience in creating contemporary and effective physician-hospital partnership structures. Well, welcome, Joel.
Thank you, Julie. It's a privilege to be with this panel.
So I'd like to thank each of you for joining us today and sharing your insight into this important area in cardiology and medicine with me and our listeners. We look forward to learning from each of you today. I'd like to start off by asking each of you how you came to this point in your career and what your daily life looks like. Charlie, let's start with you.
The journey to where I am in my career is one that I least expected if I looked back 10 to 15 years. Probably like many physician administrators, we may have fell into our roles rather than necessarily planned for them. I was involved in the formation of the Heart Institute during its formative years in 2007, 2008, when we amalgamated three individual practice groups, 30 physicians each, into a almost 90 physician specialty institute within Piedmont Healthcare under its separate 501(c) business identity. As we gained success over the following decade, I started as chief medical officer and ultimately became the chief of cardiovascular services for our healthcare system. And at the same time, Piedmont was growing as a system, as many systems were around the country. We expanded from a 4-hospital system to now an 11-hospital system. And the Heart Institute actually acted as a model for the rest of the physician cohort, if you would, of the healthcare system. So as we started to change the medical group, which we call the Physician Enterprise, I was asked to assume the role of CEO of our physician company. So we now represent the physician activity, all of the physician activity for our healthcare system. So we've got almost 1,000 employed physicians operating in conjunction with almost 1,500 independent physicians, all under the jurisdiction, if you would, of a fairly formal clinically integrated network that we call the Piedmont Clinic. So our 2,500 physicians and 11 hospitals now basically act as a virtual clinic across the northern half of the state of Georgia. So my role has expanded into trying to manage that group, I quit doing intervention about 2.5 years ago, but still actively maintain my clinic and see clinic patients between 2 and 3 half-days a week. So, but have a great time going today every day and addressing the changes and the challenges that we're all facing in healthcare right now. It's actually a fun role.
Great, it definitely does sound fun. Anthony, how about you?
Well, it's fairly similar to what Charlie has discussed. You know, I would have never anticipated a role that would be as administrative as it's evolved into. I had my first leadership opportunity out of fellowship serving as the cath lab director. And what I found within that role was that there was a lot of opportunity. You know, whether or not you wanted to take advantage of that opportunity and really impact change for patient care, innovation, system-based thinking, integrated shock care models across various health systems, things like that. And so having that opportunity to be involved with that then unanticipatedly opened other doors for me. I see myself as an interventionalist first. That's the lens at which I've always practiced. But over the last several years now, my role has really evolved and into an administrative role. I still do call and I still do a fair bit of clinical practice, 2 or 3 half-days a week of clinic, and then some interventional work. I think I see a physician administrator really having a wonderful opportunity to bridge the administrative role and the clinical role, because you understand sort of the trenches, and then also at the system level, you may have a better appreciation for the integrated complexities that sometimes face us when you might not if you're running through your clinic panel or through your OR list and so forth. So several years ago, I took on the role as chief operating officer for the physician health plan, which is 1,100 physicians and 1,500 total care providers, including our advanced practice providers. And then the university healthcare enterprise, which serves as all the clinical staff that are 52 or 3 clinics, depending on the week, and then the 6 different hospitals that we cover. That we own, and then we have physicians at a number of different other hospitals, and running that enterprise has been extraordinarily exciting. I think each day is unique in and of itself and presents challenges, but also opportunities. And I really struggled with, you know, how do you maintain a balance? And ultimately, one thing had to sort of take over for the other. And my administrative role has taken on more of a role than my clinical activity. And my father, who's a physician, you know, was talking to me a bit, and I was sort of struggling with that hat, you know, as an administrative hat. And he said, well, look at it this way. And I think he's really right. You know, you can show up and have a busy clinic and see 30, 35 patients. You can show up to work in your administrative role and impact thousands if it's done well, and impact thousands poorly if it's not done well. So it's a different responsibility in that regard. I also oversee the day-to-day operations of our cardiology practice as chief of cardiology. I call that my first love. I have just the most amazing group of physicians and administrative dyads that make that job pretty simple, actually. It's a highly evolved model that is really fun to be a part of. So I look at my evolution as one that was certainly not expected, not planned. And as Charlie said, sort of just fell into the lap as you took each stepping stone and succeeded in doing whatever that role was, and then other doors opened, and that's how it evolved for me.
Well, I'm certainly sure that's led you to develop skills you never thought you'd need. And finally, how about you, Joel?
Well, as a non-physician, I have been on the administrative side for quite some time now, and I envy those of you who can talk from both perspectives, that of an administrator, but also having been in the trenches, as you described. But I was fortunate at the beginning of my career, I had a true mentor who actually took the time to provide the training and the oversight and just give opportunities at a pretty critical stage of my career. And through that training, was eventually then able to assume the CEO role in, at that time, started life as a single specialty cardiology group, morphed into multi-specialty, and we eventually then sold to a health system. And at that point, I assumed a leadership role in the health system. So I've seen it from both the physician enterprise side and then also from the health system perspective as well. And then my group was a member of MedAxiom, so I knew MedAxiom, and when they came calling, I joined about 8 years ago. And now I have the privilege and the opportunity to see many, many programs each year. And it's pretty special to be able to work with so many different programs and really helping to transform cardiovascular care, which is the mission and vision of our parent company, the American College of Cardiology. So that's my journey in a nutshell.
Great. So now that our listeners understand all of your journeys and some of the things you do in a day, let's answer some questions. Obviously, improving the care our patients receive is our top priority, whether we work in clinical care or administration. But how do you go from thinking about an individual patient outcome to thinking strategically about improving the patient care experience and efficiency of care across an entire population? Charlie, would you like to take this one?
Well, I think it's a very interesting question. I think you can parallel the question really also to the leadership journeys that everybody just described, because as you embark upon those leadership journeys, you also have to transition your mindset from thinking about what's best for you as a physician to what's best for the system. You have to reorient the way you think about the way you do your job on a daily basis. So it's a similar transition to moving towards population health management. But I would challenge a little bit, you really can never disconnect the individual patient outcome, even in the context of population-based management, because at the end of the day, it is all about the singular patient. You can change and morph the strategies by which you try to influence an outcome. And again, that cycles back around to the leadership style, because you're going to have to be influencing larger groups of individuals to get things accomplished around, you know, common care goals and care pathways and things that will influence groups of people. So, you know, the tenets are parallel, if you would, about the way you manage not only the patient population, but you manage the system as well to influence the patient population outcome.
Charlie, that's a really interesting analogy that you made there. Thanks for sharing. Another question. So we're being measured on the care we deliver. So how do we measure the quality and efficiency of care we currently deliver? Are there tools available that are widely used? Anthony, what have you learned along the way regarding this area?
That's a very complex answer. You know, I think Charlie's point, to dovetail a little bit on that, because I think it segues pretty nicely to this answer, is when you lose sight of the individual patient, in my mind, you lose sight of your North Star. That is our beacon. The patient doesn't care how good your system care is, per se. I mean, that's important to them. But at the end of the day, what they care about is the care that they are individually going to receive or their loved one. And so the success of quality at the healthcare level has to, at some way, get back to that individual patient. And so I look at it as a bidirectional pathway. When we look at our quality metrics and so forth, how are we doing as a system? But then importantly, looking at NRC data and other sorts of data sets, how is the patient, that individual patient, thinking we're doing with their healthcare? Because you could have a leapfrog A, you could have, you know, safety grade, you have great HCAPs, but if the patient's not experiencing that in an individualized care delivery model, then the system isn't working and is broken. So I like to look at individual experiences and put that as a overlay onto our quality reports that we get from various national benchmark agencies and make sure that they're aligned, because in some situations they're not. And how we then bring it back down to the level of the patient, I think, is the art in this science.
I think that's a great point, because we went through that exercise not too long ago. And I'm sure everybody has the vignette of trying to standardize STEMI pathways across 11 hospitals so that everything's done in a similar way. Your orientation is at a system level, but the actual outcome is absolutely at the individual patient level. So I think you hit the nail right on the head with that answer.
That's great. Thank you both. So now we're thinking strategically about improving care models while also continuing to focus on the individual patient. So we have an understanding, we've measured where we currently are. So the next step is, how do we as providers perhaps partner with the hospital and health system to enhance the delivery of care? Joel, I know this is an area where you have a lot of experience. What advice can you share with our listeners today?
Well, continuing that patient focus theme, which I believe is right on, I think calling it the North Star is a great descriptor, because as long as we do that, I think we'll make good choices from an administrative standpoint. But regardless of whether the physicians are employed by a health system in private groups or in multi-specialty groups, physicians need hospitals and hospitals need physicians. And from the patient's perspective, they don't see a difference. They see it all as part of their care continuum. And their presumption is that we're all coordinated and on the same page. You know, we know the real world isn't as connected, but those partnerships are critical to getting that patient-centric focus and those patient-centric outcomes. And as Charlie mentioned, you know, trying to standardize care across 11 hospital systems, it's a challenge to coordinate care in a group of 15 cardiologists and get those consistent outcomes. And now, not just from a quality perspective, but from a cost perspective, and that adds a whole new dimension of complexity. Partnerships between hospitals and physicians, and I would say that even when they're employed by the same entity, we still need to create kind of these formal partnerships. Some people might call it co-management or other arrangements with the physicians, but we have to engage our physicians broadly in performance improvement activities, such as standardizing care, such as bringing down costs, managing patients across the continuum, et cetera. A few of us administrators aren't going to be able to make that happen through dictums or through sheer will. We're going to need the physicians by our side. So putting together formal arrangements that also align the economics. We hate to say it's about money, but a lot of times the money stands in the way. If we're paying our physicians one-dimensionally for production, we may say these activities that don't have any production associated with them languish. And we as administrators need to kind of recognize that imbalance and fix it. So those are the types of partnerships that I see. And again, it transcends the ownership model, whether the group is private or in an employed model, we still have to create those connections. And governance and leadership is huge, and having physicians at the table in that and making sure that we're connecting all the different constituent groups and clinical areas, because our organizations are not uncomplex, so it takes a little bit of doing to make that work and function.
Great. Thanks, Joel. That really segues into the next question, focusing on variations and efficiency in care. Anthony, have you found specific skills that have helped you to navigate between the clinical team and the administrative team when trying to improve variations and efficiencies in care?
You know, I think there's not a one-size model. I mean, I think there are things that speak to physicians and speak to hospital administrators alike. And I think that is data, good data, meaningful data, data that can be drilled down to the individual level and also to the system level, you know, in Tableau or other sorts of reports that speak to the question being asked. I think trying to identify that we have shared vision and goals. Imagine that you are a patient and you are going to a facility, and the facility wants something to happen one way and the provider wants something to happen another way. Well, I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek because that happens quite a bit. But if you were a patient, you would say, I'm going to steer clear of this place. I want to go to a place that actually has, you know, my best interest at heart. And so how do we get there, I think, is important. I think co-management agreements work really, really well, where you focus on quality and delivery. You know, and I like to say, no one can fake leadership. If they try, they won't last very long. I think it's okay to say, you know, I'm not really sure what the right answer is here. I'm asking for your guys' input because you are thought leaders around this campus on this subject. I think that actually lends credibility because, you know, if it's in the world of cardiovascular diseases, I feel pretty solid. If I'm going into a discussion about neonatal best practices or perioperative medicine or things like that, part of my role as a leader is to build a team to come around the table and to develop those best practices. And so I think that realism to acknowledge when you as the leader don't have the answer but is seeking their input, I think goes a long ways as well. So those are some things. Those would be sort of the broad strokes that I would apply in this sort of situation.
Great. Thanks for that advice, Anthony. And then going back to Joel, when you consult at a system or practice, what are your steps for beginning to tackle a problem area in healthcare delivery? Because we know that we like things to work smoothly, but obviously that's not always the case. So what advice can you give us?
Well, the first step is to do kind of a gap analysis and to go in and understand what it is that the organization is trying to achieve, and then taking time to meet with each of the constituent groups that are going to be impacted by trying to address that change and finding out what opportunities there are, but also then what barriers, because we often will kind of ignore the barriers and then hope that they kind of solve themselves along the way. That almost always results in either no adoption of change or slow adoption of change. So we have to do that assessment work to kind of take a look at it from all perspectives and really see where is this going to impact beyond just the obvious, because it may be like we're trying to standardize care in the ED, and so you think it's only an ED issue, but it has impact with our floors, with our hospitalist group, with other constituents, and we want to hear from all of those. So the very first step is to do that assessment work, and it helps to have people who really understand the different perspectives. They have to have a grasp of the clinical, and I would even say particular to cardiovascular, because it's not an uncomplicated specialty, it helps to have the depth in that field. And then once you do the assessment pieces, then you can come up with recommendations that include, look, in order for you to achieve X, Y, and Z, you're going to have to address these challenges to that, because they are going to get in the way if they're not addressed. One more thing, which is it always helps to have a really strong physician champion leader who says, we can do this and it's worth the effort. And with patient care as the, you know, the North Star, it's going to improve patient care, or it's going to improve the value of the service we provide.
No, that's great advice. It sounds like, you know, communication is really important, also making sure that we're always putting the patient first and then engaging all of our constituents. So one last question here. Let's say we've recognized the problem and we found some resources to help improve things. Charlie, how do you get buy-in from your team on the front lines? Now, what tips do you have for us here?
Wow, that could be a 1 hour conversation in and of itself. But I think, you know, that really defines the essence in the art of leadership. And obviously there are different styles to do that. You know, I think the predominant style around our institution is one of great inclusion and bringing everybody into crafting the solution from the beginning. And getting the people that are actually doing the work, getting the frontline folks involved from the start as to identifying the problem and coming up with a solution and actually facilitate implementing those solutions in place. I think the most important thing is, and this is one of the things I think Anthony referenced as well, the importance of physician leaders maintaining themselves clinically active. I suffer through Epic just like everybody else suffers through Epic. I see patients in clinic. I see the frontline check-in folks in our offices and the folks checking patients out. And I'm as actively engaged in what is actually going on in the frontline, not just in the ambulatory space, but in the hospital space. And as physician leaders continue to, you know, walk the gemba, so to speak, I think it provides a fair amount of validity to what you're trying to get accomplished. As long as you've got people engaged at the most forward-facing position of patient encounters and they're backed up by physician leadership, then you can get a lot accomplished.
Great. So I think that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank each of you for your fantastic insights on finding solutions for systems today. Thank you, Charlie, Anthony, and Joel, and thank you, listeners, for tuning into the podcast.
This is Dr. Allison Bailey, FACC. Thanks for joining us today, and please be sure to join us online at acc.org or on iTunes and Google Play to subscribe to Practice Made Perfect. We hope you'll join us next time as we continue our series and keep the conversation going on our new online community, Member Hub, to discuss these topics and any top-of-mind practice issues. Catch you next time to discuss more on how practice really does make perfect.